Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. It's the legislative season, and in Kansas and Missouri, there are at least two measures in play that would influence how families can make practical preparations for end-of-life decisions. Joining us now to talk about it is John Carney, Vice President for Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Hello, John.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with Kansas. You and others here at the center have been involved with an effort to revamp and consolidate end-of-life law in the state. What will that effort do, and how will it help in end-of-life situations in the state of Kansas?
Well, the changes that we're making to the Kansas laws, or hoping to be able to see implemented over the course of the next year, will fundamentally bring together all of the end-of-life decision-making processes that families need to make during the course of an advanced illness. So all the situations regarding hydration and nutrition and end-of-life decision-making about living wills and powers of attorney, it really encapsulates all the things that have been in a variety of laws over many, many years, bringing them all into one place and allowing us to be able to treat the issues and concerns a little more systematically.
So these are things like living wills, durable power of attorney. What specifically are the kinds of things that will be underneath this umbrella?
What we're going to do is combine living wills, which have been in a separate statute and laws in the state of Kansas, with the appointment of the powers of the agent. And we're also going to be taking the issue of out-of-hospital do-not-resuscitates and dealing with them a little bit differently than we have in the past. So all of the issues that we've kind of dealt with in the past in separate domains are going to be pulled into one to make it easier for families and for the law enforcement, first responders, attorneys who are working with families to be able to deal with these in a more comprehensive way.
So for families that are dealing with these, what specifically, as they deal with that kind of situation, maybe a scenario of an individual or a family that's dealing with an end-of-life situation?
What will really happen is that the appointment of the person that you want to speak for you when you can no longer speak for yourself will really become primary. And what we've really done is begun to focus on informing the agent, the person that you want to speak for you, about your preferences, about your goals, and making that primary. And that's really what this law does, is to say all of those kinds of things we can do are varied and complicated. What you really need to do is talk to your loved one about your preferences, and that's really what the law kind of, it refocuses and prioritizes the appointment of the agent first and makes it easier in the state of Kansas to have that appointment made.
So what about surrogacy then? That was a big deal with the Terry Schiavo situation. Who should speak for you when you don't have a document like this filled out? What does this law do in that kind of a situation?
Well, unfortunately, most of us adults all across the country don't name anyone to speak for us at a time when we need it. And so the law in Kansas will be changed for the first time. There will be kind of a hierarchy, a pecking order, if you will, of the people who can speak for me if I can no longer speak for myself. Now, that doesn't substitute for the importance of naming an agent, but should an occasion occur in which that is necessary, there will be kind of a default list that we will go to, and that's very, very important for many of us who don't have the chance to name somebody at a time, or we find ourselves in a situation where maybe one of our loved ones needs it.
Now, the Terry Schiavo situation, very big, a lot of attention in 2005. Would it be fair to say that the activity in this law, the work on this law, started as a result of that, or would this have happened anyway?
I think it probably would have happened anyway, but it really, Terry Schiavo really underscores the importance for this, because state of Florida had a law that that gave priority status to her then husband. So it was, It's important for us to know that Kansas will have that same kind of hierarchical status. And it is very important that should you want someone else to speak for you, it's really incumbent upon you to make sure that you name that individual and have that conversation. I don't think it relieves us of the obligation of talking about those preferences, however. As you know, with the controversy surrounding that tragic case, there was a lot of speculation about whether or not her husband could actually speak for her. And so if you've got questions about that or you've got specific preferences that need to be stated, it's important for you to still have those conversations and still name that person.
Well, let's move to Missouri now. In Missouri, the issue is the Outside the Hospital Do Not Resuscitate Act. It was passed in 2007. And in this case, the center is working on regulations that would help implement the law.
That is correct. The law actually passed in 07, as you mentioned, and then there was a kind of a date at which the regulation was supposed to be put into place, and that deadline passed on June 30th. So we have a law in Missouri without regulation, which allows people for the first time in the state of Missouri to be able to implement an order that first responders, emergency medical services, ambulance people, must honor if you wish to stipulate that you do not want to be an attempt at resuscitation. Now, most first responders have honored that for many, many years, but this is a requirement that all first responders must do it. And the regulation states very specifically about the kinds of forms and methods and the way that that should be handled. And we're working with the folks who are writing the regulation to make sure that we don't become too restrictive on what those regulations are because of against the advancing technologies and all those kind of things that we want to make sure are available to people in their choices.
Now, out-of-hospital situations, pretty basic scenarios with that, where perhaps a very elderly, frail person living in a nursing home or still at home collapses and the emergency personnel are called in. Is that the type of situation that
those are really address? Those are really the two situations that are the most prominent. It's that frail nursing home patient or that hospice patient who happens to be in the home setting. It's very, very important for those people who are in those frail elderly states, those advanced disease states, to have the forms written down and have the orders in place so that the attempts are not made to resuscitate them when the attempts would simply really provide more harm than good. It simply isn't advisable for those people to receive those kinds of treatments, and that's really what the law's attempting to do.
Well, where are the emergency personnel in this? I would think that they would be trained to go in and go full bore in a situation like this, but with this particular kind of scenario, they're asked to pull back.
They are. You know, there's this assumption that we all make that when you call 911, you want help, and that's a good assumption to make. However, the research in the literature really shows that EMS responders are very sensitive to this issue. In fact, there have been some studies in a few states that have shown that they do a better job of judging whether or not aggressive interventions in a life-threatening situation would work. But there is the risk of you know, having that treatment imposed on somebody who doesn't want it, that it won't be effective, and we kind of go to this default position again, as you mentioned, with first responders, that more is better. Well, for these particular patients, in many, many cases, more is not better. In fact, it's harmful. So we've got to make sure those things are in place. But the first responders are on board, especially in the state of Missouri, throughout in the major metropolitan areas, certainly, and we've got good support from them, and they've been working with us all along the way on this law.
Now, both efforts in Missouri and Kansas are related to a center endeavor called Transportable Physician Orders for Patient Preferences. Tell us briefly about that effort. I guess you basically have already told us about it.
Well, I have a little bit. It's kind of a mouthful. We call it TPOP for short, as you mentioned. But really what it's supposed to do is match physician orders outside the hospital, physician orders primarily, with patient preferences. So it basically kind of takes those ideas of, I know what I would want and I know what would benefit me in terms of treatment if I'm in a frail elderly state or an advanced disease state, and you marry the two into in a group of orders that are then honored by outside providers like nursing homes and first responders, emergency medical personnel, hospices, and then we're all on the same page related to not just CPR, but things like antibiotics, admission to the ICU, pain medications, and surgeries, and those kind of things. So there's a complement of services, because in many cases, all those kinds of things can help and can harm at the end of life when somebody's in the final disease state.
Are these issues typical of what many state legislators are trying to deal with, not just in Missouri and Kansas?
I think they are, especially this last one that I just mentioned, the TPOP effort. About 10 years ago, that got started only with a handful of states. There are now more than two dozen states across the nation looking at this. On the living wills, Kansas kind of came early to the game, and 15 years later, we're looking at, well, we had a lot of good ideas at the beginning, but we're finding out that some of the advances in technology don't work in our favor. So we're going back to the drawing board and saying, what do we need to do to improve it? In Missouri, we're kind of coming late to the game on the out-of-hospital orders, but we're trying to make sure that we don't, you know, address the same mistakes that other states have made in their rush to get things in place. So I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but the real issue is this issue affects every single family and sometimes almost every single patient. And it's something that consumers really need to understand and get educated on and be sensitive to in terms of how they make their end-of-life decisions and how they make their advanced care planning documents work for them.
John, you mentioned more than once that technology has played a role in the changing that we need to make in these kinds of laws. It almost seems like it's a moving target and shifting sand.
It is, and I'm glad you bring that up, because the issue for families is to talk to their family members, their loved ones, about the preferences they have, not the specific treatments, the things they value in life, the recognition of family members, being able to eat and drink, sharing meals, all those kinds of values and preferences that we have. That's the conversation you need to have, and then name that person to speak for you, because none of us, we call it the moving goalpost. You talk about the moving target. We talk about the goalpost, that many of the things that we think at 30 and 40 we would never want to tolerate in terms of our life, at 70 and 80 those things look quite different in terms of what we're willing to tolerate. And what may be important to us at 30 and 40 in terms of a career and being able to you know, provide for our families is very different at 70 and 80 when it's about holding my grandchild on my lap and being able to see that next wedding or whatever of another grandchild. Those are the things that shift. And so the preferences and the values are what's important, and then naming that person who can speak for you when you can't speak for yourself.
Well, John Carney, Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.